The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. We start with Wall Street looking to build on yesterday's post-CPI rally, with the S&P looking for its 18th record close of this year. Futures are facing a bit of pressure. Leading the charge this week continues to be big tech, with NVIDIA bouncing back in a very big way. But Citadel's Ken Griffin says investors, they have plenty of options when it comes to their portfolios with very different risk-reward profiles. On Capitol Hill, lawmakers set to vote today on a bill that would effectively ban TikTok here in the U.S., but the company is not giving up without a fight. We look at the intersection of politics and big money, plus record-breaking wage hikes in the world's fourth-largest economy, possibly putting its historic stock market rally at risk. Later in the show, the Boeing stock wipeout, it just continues as the chorus of concerns grows for investors and for would-be flyers. It is Wednesday, March the 13th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thank you so much for being here with us. We're going to get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. After a solid day for stocks yesterday, that saw the S&P close at its 17th record high of the year. Take a look at futures right now. Bit of a mixed picture. Looks like the Dow would open up about 25 points higher. The S&P just fractionally higher, basically flat. We're looking at the NASDAQ down very slightly right now. We're also checking the bond market following yesterday's February inflation report, coming in basically in line with estimates, but just a tick hotter for the year-over-year figure. Take a look at yields. We've seen those yields tick up just a bit. The benchmark moving just about 4 or 5 basis points from the level that we saw it at yesterday. We're also looking at energy, specifically oil, riding a four-session losing streak. Taking a look at oil this morning, we're seeing a bit of a bounce back. WTI and Brent crude both up almost 1%. Okay, that is your morning money setup. Let's get a check of some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good Wednesday morning to you all. House lawmakers are set to vote on a bill at 10 a.m. Eastern time today that would force TikTok's Chinese owner ByteDance to divest the popular social media company, a move that would effectively ban the app from use here in the U.S. Now, the vote coming as a report suggests TikTok intends to, quote, exhaust all legal challenges before it considers any type of divestiture, with a sale being the option of last resort. If the bill passes the House, the Senate would still need to vote on it. Meanwhile, the Pentagon is reportedly pulling out of a plan to spend as much as $2.5 billion on a chip grant to Intel. The move, if confirmed, would put the focus on the Commerce Department to make up the shortfall. The move threatens to limit the total amount Intel had been expecting to get in total federal funding, including another $10 billion from the CHIPS and Science Act. Right now, shares are slightly lower in the pre-market, down about 1.25%. And Citadel's Ken Griffin thinks the Fed should move cautiously when it comes to cutting interest rates. Speaking at the International Futures Industry Conference in Boca Raton, Florida, with CNBC yesterday, Griffin echoing what we heard from J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon a day earlier, saying, quote, the worst thing they could end up doing is cutting, pausing, and then changing direction back toward higher rates quickly. That would be the most devastating course of action, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. We'll see you a bit later in the show. And we're going to stick with Griffin's comments following yesterday's equity market bounce back led by tech and, of course, NVIDIA, the latter rallying more than 5%, closing back in on its all-time high. Griffin saying investors, they can play the markets in two very different ways.
You've got the Magnificent Seven. You've got this incredible story that's just ripping through the equity market about the transformative changes that are coming with AI. And then you've got much of the market is at earnings, price earnings levels that are far more in line with historical averages. This is a moment in time where you can, in some sense, you can sign up for big, bold, you know, these companies are changing the future, or you can put your money to work in areas of the market where price-earnings ratios are much, much more in line with historical averages and have a very different risk-reward profile.
And joining me now is Palisade Capital Management Chief Investment Officer Dan Veroux. Dan, great to have you here in the studio.
Thanks, Frank.
All right, so the way Ken Griffin kind of set it up, he's saying, hey, you can make that bold choice or basically you can play it safe, things with a valuation that's more safe. Do you agree that that's the proposition that investors are facing right now?
I don't think it's safe. It's parts of the market that are not picked over yet. There's a lot of valuation away from
the isn't that safe? I mean, as opposed to buying something that's, you know, rising 200% over the last year, like an NVIDIA, something that a lot of people consider overbought, isn't it just flat out safer to go to things that you say aren't picked over?
Well, but I look at it a little bit differently, that there's more upside in a lot of those, because a lot of companies away from the Mag 7 and some of the companies where there is excess valuation, we're about to shift fiscal policy again. Monetary policy, rather. So, some of the things that were headwinds in terms of being restrictive are going to become tailwinds, and that should be better for lower price earnings multiple stocks.
All right. So I know you're really focused on valuation. You and I, we chatted on the phone yesterday, and you're also bullish on the small caps. But I do have to point out the Russell 2000, the small caps trading at 24 times forward earnings, the S&P only at 21 times forward earnings. So if you're worried about valuation, why are you bullish on the small caps?
That's not exactly a fair comparison, because there's a big component of the Russell benchmark that has the non-earners, a lot of biotech and early stage technology companies that might be, many of them are pre-revenue and are loss-making companies. What I'm saying is focus on profitable companies. There's a lot of profitability within the Russell, and those are much more reasonably valued.
So how do you balance the whole idea that higher for longer is tougher for these smaller cap stocks? A lot of them have less cash than the mega cap tech stock. I mean,
obviously,
a small cap's not going to have the same cash on hand that an Apple is going to have. And then generally they're seen as more interest rate sensitive. So how do you balance your thesis being bullish on small caps at the same time we are in higher for longer and PE's higher?
Markets discount the future. So, you know, our view has always been that the Fed was going to begin to cut rates most likely by mid-year or just after mid-year. And that seems to be how it's going to play out. Certainly yesterday's CPI data reinforces the fact. And I think Ken Griffin is 100% right. You don't want to make a policy mistake at this point. Cutting too early and then having to have to go back and fix things in the future is going to cost a lot to the economy.
All right. Dan Veroux making the case for small caps. Dan, thank you so much for being here. Always
Thanks,
great
Frank.
To see you. All right. For more on what's driving the markets and the trend day ahead, you want to head over to CNBC Pro at CNBC.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. All right. We're going to turn our attention to overseas action and what's a developing story over in Asia. Japanese companies, including Honda, Toyota, Panasonic, Nippon Steel and more, agreeing to grant their workers their biggest pay increases since the 1990s following the country's annual wage negotiations, which just wrapped up today. We are seeing big boost to worker pay. Nippon Steel agreeing to an almost 12% raise. Honda going more than 5.5%. NEC granting a more than 4% hike. And Mitsubishi Heavy Industries agreeing to a record 8.3% pay increase. The wage hikes underscoring the country's broader inflationary trends and bolstering the case for Japan's central bank to begin raising rates at its policy meeting next week. Joining me now on the CNBC Newsline is Goldman Sachs senior Japan economist Tomohiro Tomohiro, if I mispronounced the last name.
No problem.
Great to have you here on the phone. Thank you for being here on a day like this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, so we just hit on some of the wage increases. By the way, Toyota doesn't provide a percentage, but reports say they offered workers record bonus payments. Auto industry, obviously a key industry over there in Japan, just like it is here in the U.S., to be honest. What do these wage increases mean across all industries, and what does it mean for the central bank decision coming up in less than a week?
Yep. Yeah. So far, we have just seen that the major companies just announced their wage hikes. And based on the mass media report and others, almost all major companies announced that they fully accepted trade unions' wage hike request. And basically, we know that last week, the LENGO, the Japanese Trade Union Confederation, who organized this wage negotiation round, announced that the average wage, base wage growth request by the trade union was 4.3%. So basically, you know, if all the companies did accept the request as it did, then the base wage growth is going to be very high to be that 4.3%, which is much higher than the last year's number, which was 2.5%. But one big kind of reservation is that this is a very preliminary number, because we have just seen that around 50 companies press release that on this Friday, the Friday 15th, the LENGO will announce more comprehensive numbers by collecting the wage data from roughly 800 companies. So most likely that the numbers that LENGO will announce on Friday will be lower than 4.3%. So that's the kind of point. But still, kind of, we think that the base wage hikes for the 2024 will be higher than 3%, so which is much higher than our forecast we made last year, which is the 2.5%.
Tell me here, let me jump in for a second. So I want to get a sense for investors. What does this all mean for the Japanese economy and also the Japanese markets? We had Schwab's chief investment strategist on with us yesterday. He was very bullish on the potential this could have for the Nikkei to reach 40,000, which would be a new record high for that index if these pay hikes were approved. And then the central bank agrees to raise rates. He believed that would lead to more foreign investment. Does that make sense to you when we're talking about Japan, that the wage increases are kind of a domino that leads to rate hikes by the central bank and also more investment by foreign investors?
Yeah, so starting from kind of BOJ's call, so this strong number clearly indicates that the probability for the BOJ to raise the policy rate sometime soon, maybe either March or April. So at this moment, we still do not think that the possibility of the March hike is significantly higher at this moment, because the BOJ's communication is still insufficient as a signal for the March hike. So even though we have just only less than a week to the monetary policy meeting. So this is, first rate hike in the last 15 years. So we believe that the BOJ should provide clearer communication ahead of the big policy change. So that's the main reason why we still expect the April hike. But it is still very important that the higher wage growth is a very good kind of milestone for the sustainable inflation which the BOJ want to achieve. So in that sense, this is a bullish story indeed.
All right, that BOJ decision coming up in just a few days. Tomohiro Ata, great to see you. Thank you very much for your time. All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, while inflation appears to be coming in line with expectations, there are some areas of the economy that continue to be a cause for concern. Plus, a big day for Oracle, a big payday for Oracle founder, I should say, Larry Ellison, after the company's best day in more than 2 years. And then later, we head back to Capitol Hill. We'll look at today's House TikTok vote and the future of billions of dollars in business between the U.S. and China. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. The markets, they are largely just shrugging off yesterday's hotter-than-expected CPI data, likely betting it will not derail the Fed from starting to cut interest rates by mid-year. Excuse me. But some components of CPI, they continue to show inflation, remain stubborn. Gasoline and shelter, which includes rents, they accounted for more than 60% of the monthly increase in February. On an annual basis, shelter costs, they were up nearly 6%. Let's talk more about how inflation is impacting the housing market as we're now in the heart of the spring home buying and selling season. We're joined by Bess Friedman, CEO of Brown Harris Stevens, a real estate firm that serves the New York tri-state area as well as Palm Beach and Miami, Florida. Those are some great markets there, Bess. Good morning. Great to have you back on.
Good morning. So nice to see you.
All right. So in this report, one of the things we're highlighting from that CPI report is shelter inflation. Just taking a look at it, rose 0.4% month over month, but that growth actually slowed from the 0.6 the month before. Give us a sense. How can we read this? And also want to take your temperature. How's the spring selling season going, both when it comes to inventory and also willingness of buyers to pay?
I mean, the overall challenge we have in housing is really a tightness in inventory. There's a shortfall nationwide. And so that's really having an impact on housing, on prices. And obviously, the fact that mortgage rates have doubled since where they were is also having an impact. So that's kind of put us in a little bit of gridlock in housing. But I do think the spring market will be better. We're seeing good product come on, and we're seeing busier open houses. So all signs are pointing to a better market 2024 versus 2023. But it has been a tough go, I will tell you that. Last year was not an easy housing market.
All right, so you say it's been a tough go. I was just taking a look at the mortgage rates, just a few basis points under 7%. Is that just the new normal? We've heard some people say, you say it's a tough go. We've heard some other people say they expect it to be a pretty strong season. Is there a level that we can get these interest rates at that people would be more willing to jump back in the market and also sell their houses? We talked about it yesterday, about 60% of people have a rate under 4%.
Yeah, I do think this is the new normal. We were so used to cheap money for so long, but now I think the consumer has finally accepted and stopped resisting the fact that the 2 and 3%, that's gone. And so this is the new normal. Rates are at a decent place. Historically, they're still very low, and it's an opportune time to get in there. And if you see something that you like, I would encourage the consumer to get in there and buy something if they find the home that they like. Rates, I don't see going back down to 2 and 3% for, I don't know when that will happen again. And this is still, as I said, historically very low mortgage rates. And so... Okay. So
historically low mortgage rates, but I think to most people who are looking to buy a house, especially first-time home buyers, like you mentioned, it doubled. It's shocking. This number, almost 7%. Another part of this inflation report was rent. Rents went up basically 6% as well. Does that motivate more people to buy, or is the tight inventory and the high rates, is that the buffer that stops them from making that transition?
I mean, it's all circumstantial, but I think the fact that rents have still continued to go up may encourage people to start thinking about buying versus renting, because at least they're building equity and they have something that they can, you know, live in, raise their family, do all those things, and it's theirs versus renting, which is temporary. And so I think we're starting to see people pivot and get off the sidelines. It was last year was more watch and wait, and now we're starting to see people wanting to get into the housing market and want to invest in homes. We're seeing millennials now buy homes, which is the biggest part of the buying market right now. And so I think also signs are pointing towards people getting into the market versus waiting.
All right. So last question before we let you go. Inventory. Is there any hope of more inventory coming online? And would that genuinely be deflationary when it comes to prices? Or is there so much pent up demand that people would still be willing to pay up?
I mean, it's a challenge. It's a mixed bag of both. I think inventory, we're starting to see little by little, it's incremental. And remember, the housing market is cyclical. It's not linear. It takes time. And little by little, we're starting to see more come on the market as sellers and buyers are acknowledging that this is where rates are. And if they have to sell or they have to buy, they have to get into the market. So it's going to take time for that deflationary, as you mentioned, to take place. But I think we have to be patient. It's slow and steady in housing. It's just not a quick switch. It's like inflation. It takes time to get us to a better place.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely takes time to find the right house. Used to be bidding wars. Now the question is, can you even find one? Bess Friedman, really great to see you. Thank you for being
on. Thank you. Good to see you, too.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, how Coinbase is taking advantage of Bitcoin's run to fresh records. We have your big money movers. They are coming up right after this.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your big money movers. We're going to start with Coinbase announcing a $1 billion convertible debt deal following its recent stock surge. You can see shares are up 1% right now in the pre-market. Buyers of the notes will have a 30-day option to purchase up to $150 million more to cover over allotments ahead of the 2030 due date. Shares of Coinbase benefiting from renewed optimism around Bitcoin, jumping more than 300% over the last year. And speaking of Bitcoin, hitting a fresh all-time high this morning right now during Worldwide Exchange. Take a look. Right now trading at 73,000, basically 450 Bitcoin, up over 70% year to date. We're also watching shares of Oracle this morning following their best day since 2021. The shares are up fractionally this morning. So this after the cloud company easily beat estimates for its most recent quarter, the sharp move higher, adding $15 billion to founder Larry Ellison's fortune. Ellison is Oracle's largest single shareholder by far, owning shares worth about $146 billion. And Adidas reporting flat sales compared to the prior year. The retailer says top line development reflects a conservative sell-in focused on full prices and lower Yeezy sales. North America was a weak spot. While gross margin was up due to better business mix and lower freight costs, negative FX effects, higher product cost, and more discounting, that weighed on profit. You can look at shares of Adidas right now, down just about 1.5%. All right, we're now turning our attention to the latest CNBC CFO Council survey. This is our exclusive read on the thinking of corporate financial decision makers. So nearly half of our global CFOs, they believe we are on the path for a soft landing with the U.S. avoiding recession while keeping inflation under control. The roughly other half of respondents, they had kind of mixed views, with 15% forecasting a recession this year, another 15% saying that recession's already happened. So this is the highest read on soft landing confidence in the past 5 quarters. In Q1 of 2023, only about 1 out of 6 CFOs believe we were on the path for that soft landing. So it's this increase of confidence that CFOs giving the Fed high marks on its inflation battle. 22% say the central bank is doing an excellent job. 56% say a good job. Important to note, this is also the first time in 5 quarters there were no CFOs that gave the Fed a poor grade. In Q1 of 2023, 17% answered poor. So this survey was taken between February the 26th and March the 7th. During that time, we saw earnings come in 10% higher year over year, a PCE report, and Jay Powell testify on Capitol Hill, saying in part that rate cuts are coming. With that information, these financial decision makers have also, they also have rate cut expectations that are largely in line with the market, forecasting a cut between June and September. Important to note, no CFO forecasted a cut in the March or the May meeting, but 7.5% did see a scenario where the Fed would not cut until 2025. We also got the CFO perspective on getting inflation down to the Fed's goal of 2%. About a quarter say it'll happen this year, but the overwhelming majority say this inflation fight will take until 2025 or possibly even longer. All right, time now for a check on more of this morning's headlines. NBC's Frances Rivera. She's in New York with the very latest. Frances, good morning. Great to see you.
Hi, Frank. Good morning. Are you ready? A historic presidential rematch is in the works as the fresh round of primary results are counted. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump have each won enough delegates to become the presumptive nominees, officially setting up a sequel of the 2020 election. Meanwhile, the House's slim Republican majority is getting smaller. Colorado's Ken Buck announcing that he will be stepping down at the end of next week. Buck already said he would not be running for re-election this year. But his early resignation took some of his colleagues off guard, including House Speaker Mike Johnson, who can only afford 2 defections on legislation. Colorado Governor Jared Polis says a special election for Buck's seat will take place on June 25th to align with the already scheduled presidential primary. The New York Jets have already lost Aaron Rodgers once and could lose him again. NBC News confirming that the 4-time NFL MVP tops Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s short list of potential picks for vice president. Former pro wrestler and governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura, is also on that short list. Apparently, they've been in contact with RFK and Aaron Rodgers, talking regularly in the past month. Frank, so we should know in about 30 days is what RFK Jr. is saying.
I just want to be clear. Decision. You said Jesse Ventura, former pro wrestler. I know he's also the Minnesota governor, but former pro wrestler. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, there's options.
Great to see you. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the Boeing stock wipeout, it just continues as some of its largest customers sound the alarm for investors and would-be flyers. Also, as CNBC celebrates Women's Heritage Month, we are sharing the stories of some of our newly named CNBC Changemakers. That's an annual list of 50 women who are innovating and transforming business. As we head to break, here is Zoetis CEO, Kristen Peck.
Being a changemaker means embracing uncertainty to deliver outstanding performance. I think to do that, you've got to start with curiosity. Be curious about the challenges in front of you. You then got to have the commitment to go the long haul to do that. It often requires partnership to come up with creative solutions. And lastly, it requires agility to pivot when you need to.
And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We're going to pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with the S&P 500 coming off its 17th record close of the year. Take a look right now. Seeing a bit of a mixed picture when it comes to the markets. Look like the Dow would open up about 35 points higher, hitting its highs of this morning. The S&P essentially flat, the NASDAQ fractionally lower right now. We're also digging into some of the Dow pre-market movers. Take a look right here at the top of the list. Chevron shares up about a half a percent. Merck right behind it. We're going to continue to talk about oil, but we're seeing Chevron again up a half a percent. Walmart in the third place spot, up about 1/3 of 1%. We're also checking the bond market this morning on the back of yesterday's CPI report. Take a look at yields. We did see them tick up just a bit. The benchmark right now at 4.15%, moving about 5 basis points higher after that slightly hotter than expected CPI report. And again, as I mentioned, we're looking at energy, specifically oil, riding a 4-session losing streak. But right now we are seeing a bit of a turnaround. Oil hitting its highs of the morning. Right now, WTI basically up 1%. Similar story for Brent crude. Okay, that's your morning money set up. Now we want to turn our attention to Capitol Hill. As lawmakers, they get set to vote on a bipartisan bill that could decide the future of TikTok here in the U.S. This is the social media platform is reportedly planning to exhaust all legal channels before considering any kind of divestiture from parent company ByteDance. Emily Wilkins joins us now with much more on this story. Emily, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Well, yeah, the House is expected to pass a bill this morning that would give TikTok an ultimatum, either divest from a Chinese parent company ByteDance or be banned in the U.S. But while the bill has sped through the House, the road ahead is going to be getting tougher. TikTok has ramped up lobbying efforts against the bill. TikTok CEO Shouzi Chu is expected to be in D.C. for this week for meetings. Plus, dozens of video creators met with lawmakers yesterday, and app users are getting notifications to call their member of Congress. And yesterday, you can see those creators, they were joined by a handful of progressive lawmakers, including Congressman Maxwell Frost, who said the roughly 6-month window TikTok would have to find a new owner under the bill wouldn't be enough time.
It's unreasonable to believe that in 180 days that a buyer will be found and that the deal can move forward, which would result in TikTok being banned. Whether it's banned for a year or 2 years or 6 months, a ban is a ban.
Another hurdle is that the bill lacks a clear path in the Senate. Now, senators I spoke with yesterday told me that they share the national security concerns around the app, but they worry about other issues, including freedom of speech, whether the bill singles out and punishes TikTok unconstitutionally, and the ramifications of getting rid of a popular app among 170 million American users. Congressman Mike Gallagher, chair of the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party and one of the bill's main backers, said that his bill has been tailored to avoid past pitfalls to TikTok bans, like measures that are too targeted against one company.
What our bill is a regulatory framework. It is prospective for companies that are controlled by a foreign adversary. It's a regulatory framework, not a punitive framework, and therefore I think any concerns over a bill of attainder simply don't obtain in this case.
Some senators also told me they're just waiting to see what the House does before taking a closer look at the bill. A near unanimous vote today could put pressure on the Senate to pass legislation. And Frank, we'll be keeping a close eye on that vote. It's expected around 10 a.m.
Yeah, I think a lot of eyes are on that vote. As you mentioned, 170 million users. That's a lot of people and a lot of creators out there. I do have to ask you about one person that's actually not on TikTok, former President Trump. He was here on CNBC a few days ago talking quite a bit about TikTok. Have his comments, have they fueled this debate either way?
You know what? It really doesn't seem like Trump's comments have made an impact here. It's always interesting to see which of his comments really resound with the Republican Party and which one they're kind of like, eh, no, we're good. This seems to be one where because Trump really identified his concerns about Meta more than his concerns about, say, national security, he really didn't touch on kind of the heart of why lawmakers are doing this, which are, of course, concerns that via ByteDance, that the Chinese Communist Party could potentially get access to Americans' data. Now, of course, TikTok has said that if they did ask for that data, they wouldn't give it. But I think there's just a lot of mistrust and suspicion there, lots of questions. And that's really what lawmakers are trying to target with this bill, Frank. I've heard several times they don't want to get rid of TikTok. They're perfectly fine with TikTok. The concern is the tie that TikTok has via ByteDance to the CCP.
All right, Emily Wilkins, live in D.C. Emily, always great to see you. Thank you very much. All right, let's talk much more about the key challenges of a TikTok ban. Joining me now, Dwardrick McNeil, Longview Global Senior Policy Analyst and a CNBC contributor. Dwardrick, it's really great to have you on a day like this. How's it going?
Good morning, Frank. How are you? Good to see you.
All right, so you gave us some notes. You said, and this is a phrase we don't use often, that this bill to ban TikTok, at least in the House, it has remarkable bipartisan support. It is expected to pass the House. But let me ask you, what happens after this? Does this have a chance in the Senate?
Look, I think it's going to be much, much tougher in the Senate, Frank. I think it certainly has a chance, especially given what we're seeing the administration and the intelligence community in briefings with members and senators to really talk about some of their national security concerns. But look, I think the very direct targeting of TikTok in the legislation with some very prescriptive actions that they want to see take place will give it some pause in the Senate. I think the Senate is likely to soften the language, but my bet is that we do get some sort of TikTok action in this round.
All right, so you actually do think there's something that happens in the Senate. They may adjust the bill, but you're saying that you believe it will go through the Senate. Important to note, President Biden said that he would sign the bill. Speaking of the president, we also have an election coming up, and we're hearing from the U.S. intelligence chief, and he had some very pointed comments about TikTok. The chief, Avril Haines, says he, quote unquote, cannot rule out the possibility of China using TikTok to influence the presidential election. How important is this bill as we approach that November election?
I think it's a good point to make, Frank. I mean, I think the public concerns that we know, understanding that we're not privy to all the intel that's out there, but the real concern is that the app vacuums up American data, can influence American public policy and also elections, and could be weaponized against American citizens. We've seen some of that ability to influence outcomes, or at least attempt to, with the way TikTok has tried to lobby against this divestiture bill. So I think this is an interesting point. The counterpoint to that, though, is there really has to be something there, because this is no great electoral benefit to Biden, given the number of Americans and given the number of young Americans that use this app. So for those of us watching, we say there really has to be some concerns here.
Yeah, Emily Wilkins just on a minute ago said 170 million. That's quite a lot of people. I got a kind of a complicated question for you. What is this whole battle? What does this say about D.C. and money? So we know that there's Susquehanna, a big investment firm. They have about a 15% stake in TikTok, or they actually the parent company of ByteDance. At the same time, we have issues with the U.S. and China. Some people call it de-risking. Some people call it decoupling. How does this all play in effect, that there's American equity stake in this company? At the same time, there's a lot of U.S.-China tensions. Could this be that metaphorical straw in the back of the camel? I mean, it's a complicated question, but I know you can break it down, Dwardrick.
Well, look, I think the important part about the TikTok battle as we're seeing it is just the concern that many people have about the interconnectivity of these two economies and about, quite frankly, the advantage that China has. Because, Frank, let me be clear with you. If the Chinese government said to a company that this is how you need to move, I cannot think of a system where a U.S. company, even a Chinese company for that matter, would push back as aggressively to the degree that TikTok has done, that you would have Chinese nationals trying to persuade the CCP that this is the wrong action to take. So there is some asymmetry here in the way in which things are happening in the U.S.-China relationship that only gives national security people here in Washington more pause and more concern.
Yeah, it's a lot going on here. As a matter of fact, Rand Paul, just I believe it was either yesterday or the day before, saying that us trying to ban TikTok is very similar to what China does to apps in China. So just people on both sides of the fence really kind of pushing and pulling on this. Dwarja McNeil, really great to see you. Thank you for your time and for your insight.
Thanks, Frank.
All right, this morning, we are also watching shares of Boeing after falling 4% yesterday on new developments around that door plug blowout. The National Transportation Safety Board announcing it will hold a two-day investigative hearing in August on the incident involving that Alaska Air flight. This, as Alaska confirms to NBC, the plane at the center of that January 5th blowout was scheduled for maintenance after the flight was finished. Earlier reports revealing engineers and technicians for the airline were so concerned about growing evidence of a problem with the Boeing 737 MAX 9, they wanted it to come out of service, but the airline, it chose to keep it flying with some restrictions. The CEO of Alaska now, part of a growing chorus of CEOs, and some of Boeing's biggest customers, including Southwest, United, all discussing the impact of the crisis on their end, revealing they're scaling back on flights and they're also scaling back on their hiring plans as they face the reality of getting fewer Boeing planes than they originally had planned at the start of the year. All right, coming up, another day, another bullish call around the bell of the market ball, I should say. We're talking about NVIDIA. How high one of Wall Street's banks thinks the stock can fly. But first, we have a few of your top trending stories. The hottest item at Trader Joe's, it isn't orange chicken or cookie butter, it's tote bags. Limited edition mini totes going for nearly $1,000 on eBay after they sold out at the stores. The bags originally went for $3 each, and they developed just a bit of a cult following, similar to those Stanley cups. Neil Young making his return to Spotify 2 years after pulling his songs from the platform in protest of its exclusive deal with Joe Rogan. The singer says he can't afford to boycott every service if he wants his music to be heard, though he still believes that Spotify has poor sound quality. And forget coffee breath. How about French fry freshener? Tongue twister. McDonald's releasing perfumes in Japan that smell exactly like its French fries. The chain is offering 3 cents. Seaweed salt, garlic pepper mayo. That sounds really good, actually. And classic salted. Robot Exchange. We're coming back right after this. And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We're going to start off with a market flash for you on Shell. Bloomberg reporting that the energy giant is cutting about 20% of jobs in its deals team as part of a restructuring effort to cut cost overall. Taking a look at shares, you see those shares are moving up just about a quarter of 1%. All right, time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Bank of America becoming the latest to hike its price target on NVIDIA, moving it from $9.25 to $1,100 per share. B of A saying while there may be caution around the stock's nearly 90% surge so far this year, there's still a larger opportunity around the stock thanks to a strong pipeline and a compelling valuation. Jefferies upgrading its rating on Southwest Airlines, moving it to a hold. It says the airline is looking at a low-cost momentum reset and that the stock is now fairly valued. And Goldman Sachs initiating coverage of Royal Caribbean, giving it a buy rating and a $162 price target. It says the cruise operator offers best-in-class execution with the most exposure to incremental pricing tailwinds. Time now for your global briefing. In Japan, we talked about this story earlier. Toyota, Panasonic, Nippon Steel, and Nissan, among the biggest companies agreeing to fully meet union demands for pay increases. The country's government has been focusing more on wage hikes in an effort to boost consumer spending. The moves now pave the way for a potential shift in monetary policy at the Bank of Japan's meeting next week. EU lawmakers, they're set to give final approval to laws around artificial intelligence, expected to take effect later this year. The act, which was first proposed 5 years ago, will likely signal how other countries look to regulate the red-hot tech. And Volkswagen expects vehicle orders in Europe to grow in the coming months, thanks in part to its new EV models. The carmaker says it started the year with a clearly positive trend compared to last year, as it focuses on ramping up new vehicles and reducing cost. All right, coming up, the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus the hotter-than-expected CPI report, not discouraging our next guest, why she says the bull market remains firmly intact. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with the Pentagon reportedly pulling out of a plan to spend as much as $2.5 billion on a chip grant to Intel. If confirmed, the move could limit the total amount of funding Intel had been expecting, including another $10 billion from the CHIPS Act. Taking a look at shares of Intel this morning, down more than 1%. Citadel's Ken Griffin advising the Fed to move cautiously when it comes to cutting interest rates, saying The worst thing they could end up doing is cutting, pausing, and then changing direction back towards higher rates. Coinbase announcing a $1 billion convertible debt deal following its recent stock surge. Buyers of the notes, they'll have a 30-day option to purchase up to $150 more to cover over allotments ahead of that 2030 due date. Shares of Coinbase, they're up almost 0.5%. Coinbase benefiting from renewed optimism around Bitcoin, which is hitting a fresh all-time high this morning, actually right during the show, adding to a more than 70% gain so far this year. Take a look at Bitcoin right now, trading basically at $73,260. Stocks, they're looking to keep the records rolling after the S&P 500. It hit its 17th record close of the year yesterday. Hard to believe, 17, wow. But it's not just the markets here in the U.S. that are climbing to record or near record highs so far in 2024. In addition to the MSCI Equity Index for the U.S., indexes tracking markets in Japan, France, Australia, India, and Taiwan, they have all touched fresh highs. Those six markets, they account for more than 75% of the market cap for the MSCI's All Countries World Index. Also, for the first time since 2021, nearly one-third of the 47 markets included in that index, they're trading within 5% of record highs. For much more on this and the trading day ahead, let's bring in Victoria Green, G-Square Private Wealth founding partner and chief investment officer. She's also a CNBC contributor and a friend of Worldwide Exchange. Vicky, always great to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
All right, so we just spelled it out. Our friend Kramer likes to say there's a bull market somewhere. It looks like it's a bull market just about everywhere. When you're talking to your clients, how do you tell them to play a market here in the U.S. and really globally that seems a bit extended?
And we still like the U.S. Over the rest of the world. And you got to be a little careful in emerging markets because some funds in emerging markets are definitely very weighted to China, who has been kind of the thorn in the side and not rallying along with the rest of this global lockstep bull. But when you look at it, you realize the breadth is better. It's not just the Magnificent Seven. They get a lot of coverage, but you have the granolas in Europe. They've got to give it to Goldman Sachs for finding a better algorithm there. And so you have them rallying. You have Europe rallying. You have India rallying. You have Japan rallying. It's not just U.S. tech. It's not just the Magnificent Seven. Multiple sectors are lifted up. Multiple companies trading above their 200-day moving average. I think we're at 60-70% now. And so you look around and say there's a lot of optimism, and it's not just this narrowness that has been the focus since October.
All right. So you got your WEX word of the day for us. It's a great reference. I'm just going to put out the nerd alert right now.
Absolutely. 100% nerdy. But it's Kobayashi, as in Kobayashi Maru, because the Fed is right now in their own Kobayashi Maru. If they go too quickly, they risk inflation reaccelerating. If they go too slowly, they risk a recession. It's a no-win classic Star Trek scenario. And so I look at this and say, maybe they can pull off a Captain Kirk, find a way around the system and figure out a way to win the non-winnable scenario. But it is really tough with inflation kind of popping up a little bit, not just one data point in January. Now you had February coming in a little hot. The Fed is in a Kobayashi Maru, 100%.
You know, by the way, great reference. And there's no Dr. or Mr. Spock on the sideline saying that Kirk cheated. We're getting too nerdy. I want to get back to the markets, Vicky. What do you make of yesterday? CPI was a bit hotter. One thing that a lot of people were concerned about was shelter inflation. But still, we saw the S&P hit a new record. We saw a broad-based rally. I mean, what does that tell you?
It tells us the markets are focused on more than just the Fed. Yes, the Fed is a big player, but number one, expectations are still steady at 3 to 4 cuts this year, which is more aligned with the Fed dot plot. We are definitely going to need to watch what the Fed says and changes to the dot plot next week. But investors are looking beneath the surface on this and saying, okay, the Fed is restrictive. Fed's probably staying restrictive till the summer, June, July for the first cut, but we're still going to get cuts this year. And it is likely we will get cuts, even if they're a little bit slower. But now we've seen the swaps market realign with what the Fed is saying. And I like that better. It gives the market confidence that we kind of have a clear vision forward. It's going to be data dependent, to use Powell's favorite word. But there is potential we still have cuts in the market. Market likes that.
All right. So I want to get to your picks. Both of your picks, they're reporting earnings coming up. Adobe and Dick's Sporting Goods. Why are you in favor of buying these stocks right now? Both are trading pretty close to all-time highs.
Sure. Number one, Adobe's pulled back because they have the threat coming from OpenAI and their potential text to video technology. But we feel like Adobe can protect its moat. They need to prove their moat, though. They need to show that their product is superior. But they've done great. We think they have a large runway to increase their annual recurring revenue. They're doing renewals on Adobe Pro plans, and they hiked those about 40%. So they should continue to see strong revenue growth. It's going to be a lot about the Gen AI and how they can push Firefly forward. They've had
had some good demonstrations. But even if they see some potential problems coming from competition, they're still the trusted source for creative and for image editing, which editing is still going to need to be done. And then Dick's, we really, really love their concept. Number one, they hit a higher-end consumer, and we've seen the higher-end consumer do very well this earnings season.
All right, Victoria Green, always great to see you. Great Wex word of the day, Kobayashi. Nerd alert once again. Good to see you. All right, that's going to do it for us. If you're looking for more insights on the market and your investments, go to cnbc.com/pro for CNBC Pro. Have a great day. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.